Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast. This is episode 63, the post-Rubicon slash Thanksgiving Day edition. Your hosts for this evening are Alexev Card, CSM representative Ali Aras.
Hello.
And a returning Ninja Turtle.
Hey guys, I'm back.
Our special guest for this episode, CSM representative and goon overlord of HiSec, Mina.
Hello.
First, this is a Thanksgiving Day edition of the cast. Everybody here has pretty much just got in the door from our Thanksgiving Day travels, so instead of our usual shout-outs, we are going to give thank-outs. I am thankful for Team 5-0 and the warp speed changes. I don't think they would have made the HiSec contract we had over this past week like remotely as fun as it turned out to be, but it was because we were warping fast, so awesome.
I'm thankful for the immortalization of the whole tanking elite certificate. It's been for those who had it there, they were able to redeem it as a special item. If you had it, go ahead and check out your redeeming system, but I'm thankful that that has remained in the game despite updates and overhauls.
That's funny. It's that sentimental to a player that hasn't been playing that long. It's like, I saw it in the redeem items thing and I'm like, fuck, I'm never docked. Like, I'm never in a station. I can never get that thing. So, like, I have to make a special trip in now. Find a fucking station and get it. It was pretty cool, though. But, I don't know. I guess I'm thankful for, like, family and friends and just hanging out. And a people-to-turkey ratio of 2-to-1. It's pretty fucking baller.
Family and friends, what?
Yeah.
I'm not playing enough video games, Turtle.
I know.
I guess I'm thankful for free hotel internet, which is enabling me to record this podcast while not fully done with my Thanksgiving travels.
That's a good thing to be thankful for. I would like to extend my thanks to RVB for their cooperation in the RVB Customs Authority in HiSec.
Which you're definitely going to talk all about.
Oh, well, a little bit about it anyway.
No, everything, all the things.
All the things is bad.
I'm also thankful for our sponsor, Eve Time Code. Buy 14 Eve Time Codes, get one free. EveTimeCode.com, where your business counts. Now, this being the post-Thanksgiving Day edition, I thought it would be cool if we went down the host roster and talked about our Thanksgivings and maybe gave a story or two. Turtle, why don't you tell us about your Thanksgiving Day?
I just went up north for about like a day and a half, just got back actually. Hung out with my aunt and uncle and me and my girlfriend and just, you know, did the family thing. Took a step back from Eve, set long training and just didn't play. It was tough. But we made it work.
You powered through it.
Yeah, but
you know, you should be thankful you do that. I step back from Eve and I come back to like 50 render mails.
I downloaded Elysium, it's on my tablet, and like, yeah, you're lucky I'm here. Really want to watch that movie.
Which movie?
Elysium.
Matt Damon. Oh, you really want to watch Elysium?
I don't know, it looked interesting.
Hmm. Well, get back to me on that, because it did not look interesting to me at all. Anyway, Allie, how was your Thanksgiving? What'd you do?
It was good. I'm visiting my boyfriend's family. First time, which is cool. And just got back from playing. If you haven't played the game Space Team yet, you get it on your Android phone and you get up to 4 people. And it's kind of like a Star Trek console in that everyone gets a couple of buttons and you have to push the buttons and tell other people to push their buttons. And it's stuff like, rotate thrusters, engage axial gyroscopes or whatever. So it's all technobabble, and it's a fantastic game, and I want to make an EVE edition with stuff like Sea Dread, Siege Green, post-dump shit and local, whatever.
That sounds amazing. I would love to play that game.
It's a fun game. It's a confusing game. It's a game that will break you of the habit of repeating orders if you do that, although you don't. And it's a good way to, make some friends and lose other friends.
Mina, how about you?
Well, actually, on the Sunday before Thanksgiving, my parents always throw what they call a stray cat dinner, where they bring in all the friends and family who don't necessarily have large enough families to warrant their own Thanksgiving dinner. So we get, you know, 20 people around for a party and stuff, which is much more interesting than going up to my grandparents on Thanksgiving proper. And that was all. You know, just nothing very exciting.
Pretty good, though. I went up to my aunt's in Center Valley, Pennsylvania. Had a really nice dinner. Got to see that half of the family and a friend of the family who was recently hospitalized. He took the time to come and have dinner with us, which was really nice to see him. And next day, my cousin, who missed the actual Thanksgiving dinner because he was with his wife's family, came up for the afternoon, and we had cheesesteaks and shot pool, which was great. And then I saw the other half of the family on the way home, stopped by, ate turkey leftovers over at their house, and played a game called Pigmania. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that game. It's a game from the 70s where instead of rolling, it's like sort of a dice game, but instead of dice, it's little tiny pig figurines.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Yeah, you like make if you stand up or if they're like leaning on their snout and shit. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I have literally not played this game in about 19 years, but I don't know, we found it or it was waiting in the wings, I'm not sure, but they brought it out. And it was me, my cousin Pete, my cousin Jess, her husband, my Aunt Nancy, with my Uncle Bill looking on, like, sort of aloofly out of the corner. And despite being a stupid, like, pig-rummy combo, we all got extremely invested in what turned out to be a really competitive game of Pigmania. To the point where my cousin-in-law, my cousin's husband, was about to win. Like, he would get to 100 points on his next turn. And no one so far had any luck stopping people from getting points. And I was the next, like, closest person. So I had to win on this one turn. And it was all coming down to, like, well, if I don't do this, like, it's over. So I go for the roll that will decide it all. And somebody, like, if you can call out the combination that somebody is going to roll, then they lose those points instead of gaining them. So somebody did one of those things, so I had that pressure riding on me too, and it's all coming down to this roll. I had made like 5 hot rolls in a row, so I've got this cup. It's like an Eagles commemorative cup from the 90s, like cheap plastic thing, but really old. I'm shaking, and I go to like slam it down like we had been doing, but I guess I was a little too into it. I tend to slam it down. I like exploded the rim of the cup. It caused a complete cup collapse, and shards of plastic and dust flew everywhere. And it wound up only being worth 1 point. I had to make another roll anyway. We couldn't stop laughing for about 10 minutes. I wound up winning on the second roll, thank God. But, man, we really got into it. Probably, and it would be very unhealthy, I think, for my family to play Risk or any like serious game like that. We would probably kill each other. Alright, let's get into some Eve stuff. We had an extremely large amount of interest in this poll result, probably due in no small part to the recent Community Spotlight. By the way, if you're joining us since the Community Spotlight, welcome to the podcast. Good to have you with us.
I have metrics now to track you.
Alright, the question was, who are you supporting in the Rust vs. N3 war? This is the big war that's raging in the South right now. 150 people voted, and it was pretty divided. The winner? Neither. Fuck them. With 42% of the vote. Of those people that did pick a side, it seems like the bulk are going to support N3 here. That's Nully, NCDOT, Pandemic Legion, Insidious Empire, and those guys. That's at 37%. With only 21% supporting the Russian bloc. Mina, where do you fall on this spectrum?
Well, I mean, we're there as an honorable third party. We're shooting everyone, I promise.
What about it as a personal pilot level? Do you have any affinity for the groups fighting, or are you really just there for the kill mails?
Well, really just there for the kill mails, which are totally from both sides.
course. It would be ludicrous to suggest otherwise.
It would be dishonorable to not, you know, shoot both sides as an honorable third party. And of course, goons are paragons of honor.
I mean, as I understand it, fortunately, you've got De Bigred Boat to make sure that that happens.
Yes, of course.
If you really want to make sure it happens, get Durfer Dur. That's what I hear. Guaranteed to shoot blues.
Assuming you had any.
Of course, which, as we've established, would be absolutely disingenuous to suggest that thing. So that war is continuing. It's sort of, it seems like it's calmed down a little bit in terms of decisive fights. There have still been lots of fights. There have been a few node crashes, lots of capital fights, but no major stations being flipped. It appears that everybody's sort of holding the line for the most part. What we have seen is fighting spread out to multiple areas, including the drone regions and some of the Renner space in the Deep South. And we're seeing smaller scale fighting and much more frequent changing of hands, with systems being taken, retaken, and then lost again.
Yeah, you had, you know, the initial headshot attempts on both sides, and everyone has sort of realized that this is going to be a long haul now. And even losses so far aren't really phasing either side, so settle in, boys.
Alioras, what do you think of this 0-0 conflict and how it's developing?
I'm mostly tending to agree with the, you know, settle in for the long haul type of thing. It's interesting that it's, you know, there was a period like this in the Fountain War where after the sort of initial we're going to fight moment, there was, and the initial sort of swing towards test or towards the CFC, there was sort of a eyes towards test and the CFC in different sort of areas. There ended up being a lot of back and forth for a while that didn't really move anything. Difference between that war and this one was there was a lot more sort of loud propaganda posting over there, so it felt like more stuff was happening. The thing that interests me is the node crashes that we've seen. There have been two right after the other. In both cases, CCP has posted talking about sort of what's gone on. One of them, time ran backwards. And in one of the other one, something took 5 minutes to compute. So it's interesting to see server stability not really keeping up now that Tide has come in.
And it's also worth mentioning that both of the crashes had significant tactical impact. I think they, in both cases, they reversed the outcome of a fight. So if, well, I mean, this sort of ties into the skirmish fighting and other parts on the map. If pilots leave to fight there, for instance, Insidious Empire is defending space up in the drone regions, if they don't come back down for these timer fights and, you know, fighting gets a little bit more distributed, those node crashes may become less frequent as things go on. And also, I assume at some point, both sides are going to have some kind of burnout, at least to some degree, which should hopefully lower numbers on both sides as well. And if that happens, it's hard to say who exactly would benefit the most, but I would suspect a slight edge on the slow cat carrier side, which would be PL and Nully, compared to the dread dropping side of the Russians. Then again, I don't have too much SOV fighting experience in like extreme tie dye situations, so I could be wrong on that. But
yeah, given that the, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Mina, but the CFC's advantage tends to be in the amount of people that they can field rather than the size of the ships being fielded. So if you're going to lower the number of people coming in, the size will end up being more important. On the other hand, I don't think anyone at CCP wants to have a solution that leads to actual capped fight sizes, because they get quite a lot of PR mileage out of being able to say we had, you know, 4,000 or 6,000 people in one place.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about the numbers thing. Typically, we've had instances where we've had 200 dreadnoughts on field, but it's not a normal thing.
One of which was the second node crash, if I remember correctly.
I'm not sure that we personally had that kind of dreads there. I think Razor did, but it wasn't a combined CFC group.
No, I think the bulk of the dreadnoughts were actually proper stain wagon dreads. Still, though, I think as the numbers dwindle, the edge goes to the extreme rep power of the carriers.
Yeah, perhaps. On the other hand, I mean, it depends if they can drop carriers and then escalate with dreads without, you know, more escalating to supers come in. Who knows? Not that that's likely.
Well, if it does come to supers, PL is one of the largest super fleets in the game if they want to use it, so... Unless,
right.
Say,
if,
CFC
if,
would
if
be willing to
if they
want to
use
commit.
It, is the key there.
Yeah, good point.
But if you drop, you know, 150, 200 dreads on a couple hundred carriers, you need to escalate to the supers or you're going to lose the carriers.
Do you, well, at what point does it become worth it? Give our listeners a little bit insight to the calculus of coalitions and alliances when it comes to the finances of a fight. At what point do you guys decide, you know, we should probably commit the super fleet because it'd be just too bad otherwise, or, you know, we think we have enough intel that would make it a good bet that's worth the risk?
You know, when it comes to, like, supers and whatnot, I'm completely the wrong person to ask.
Okay, fair enough.
But I thought all big block people were the same.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're all Starfleet commanders and know everything about everything. I'm just
playing
coy with you.
Speaking of blocks... And this is a sort of a quick news piece, but I think it's really noteworthy. There's a new executive for Against All Authorities, and for the first time since Manfred Sidious a couple years back, it's not a Russian. The new guy is Lahari, who I actually talked to during the Providence campaign we had recently. That's cool. Like, he's going to be the executor of a... I don't think anyone would... disagree that AAA, now more than any time in recent history, is a ethnically Russian identity alliance. But it's going to have a non-ethnic Russian executor. I think that's a good move, generally speaking. Because it gives them a little more... not flexibility or really diversity, but it does have more appeal, I guess. Especially even on the diplomatic side of things, in that... You don't need to be able to speak Russian to talk to their executor easily. I don't know. When I had good relations with Manfred when he was their exec, and one of those reasons was because I could combo him anytime I wanted. It didn't feel like a bother for him to talk to me in English. And I never really had that kind of relationship with any of the AAA execs since him, probably for that reason.
Yeah, maybe so, but I mean, on one hand, one thing you see happen pretty often in it seems like Russian alliances especially, is the two sides wind up alienating each other and you get a schism. You saw it with RA and plenty of other times. Actually,
yeah,
RA is the only example I can think of.
You've seen instances of it working. I mean, AAA worked successfully as an alliance with that dual... sort of U.S.-Russian commingling for quite a while before that finally took losing all their space for that schism to finally happen. When it happened,
well,
it happened hardcore, but...
We'll have to see how it works out for them.
It's definitely,
as they say, too early to tell.
Yeah, too early to tell, but the guy seems like he's got a good head on his shoulders for the one time I talked to him. And having a new executor mid-war, you know, he's going to have a twofold challenge on his hands. One, the obvious of winning the war. And the other, as he said, maintaining the cohesion within the alliance between its different time zones. But if they can pull off a large and motivated U.S. time zone in addition to their Russian, that's going to give them quite the edge in the South fight. So one will complement the other, no doubt.
Yeah, could be. We'll see how it goes.
And our final piece of news, Rubicon has launched with tons of content. I think the Empire Pocos are probably working out better than anyone ever hoped in terms of getting HiSec motivated and giving people stuff to fight over that they feel like it matters and has consequence. And we're really happy to have Mina here because he has been personally involved in one of the more interesting aspects of this land rush, which is all the Empire Pocos becoming player capturable and plenty of players electing to do so. Why don't you talk to us about the RVB Customs Authority?
Well, about a couple weeks, about a month maybe before Rubicon, actually Mangala came to me and was like, how about we do this? Because you guys want them for the money and we want them for the fights, and it'll complement each other real well. And, you know, the rest is history, basically. We've got our people coordinating with their people, Mini Love being our primary, arm in HiSec. They've taken not really a break, but they've taken time out of terrorizing freighter pilots everywhere to defend and take everything that we've taken so far.
What's the division of labor here? Is RVB taking all the POCOs in certain systems, or are you all putting them under all corps? How's this working?
They have theirs and we have ours. Our primary interests were the ones immediately around JITA, as we felt that those would probably be the most valuable ones. So we took Perimeter, Sobaseki, Marusai, and Move a Line In, or however the hell you pronounce it. Split the other systems with them. They've got, of course, their constellation, and then God knows how many others. Last I heard, they'd dropped well over 100 POCOs.
Amazing.
Which isn't even the largest chunk. I wasn't watching the stream myself, but someone who was mentioned, Fozzie, said something about how the largest single holder of POCOs right now is a one-man corp. Mentioned that down in Eve Down Under, which is kind of astounding.
Oh, wonder whose all-corp that is.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I wonder where most of the POCO action is going on. I mean, I've been close to JITA, and the stuff that I've heard about has been RVB and, our RVB taking stuff in that area, and a little bit about the stuff in the area where Sound's living now, but I guess I don't have a good picture of the whole landscape.
Well, we've seen some action, a lot of action in the Forge. Nora was contracted there, which we'll talk about in a bit. Also, which we'll talk about in a bit, we got a ally in our war against RVB. RVB pulled in an ally, and that ally attacked some POCOs that one of our corps in our alliance took in Moldenheath. Down near Tionasuda, I think it is? One of the T systems. And, so they were attacking that, and it looks like they also attacked a number of POCOs held by other corps in the surrounding area. So, I mean, I haven't heard any instances of massive land grabs in, like, Galenti space, but I'm sure there was a lot of action around Amar. It seems like there's a lot of action around the trade hubs in Mimitar space. So it seems to be relatively widespread. And it probably hasn't touched, like, all corners of HiSec yet, but I think, like Mina said, people have made their calculations as to what's the most valuable, and are probably going for it in that order, I would think.
Yeah, I know Fozzie tweeted, I'm looking through back on the 20th, he tweeted that at least one customs office had been killed in all but one of the Empire regions as of the 20th, and then I'm trying to find who it was, but someone else said it's like 3,000 plus destroyed in the first few days.
Well, so there's an entire region with no POCOs destroyed?
No, there's only 10,000 planets in HiSec. Only
there 10,000. Was for a while, I think.
Yeah, that was as of the 20th. I'm sure that it's changed.
I was gonna say, that's terrible. That must be the most boring region on the planet.
Yeah.
So, you made the estimation that the ones near Jita would be the biggest payoff. Are you opening these publicly to tax the hell out of HiSec, or are you closing them off for maximum tiers? What's the route that you guys are going?
Oh, they are completely open to anyone who isn't minus 10. We've reserved minus 10 for, of course, people who we don't like and people who decide that they're going to try to take them from us. They better succeed, because otherwise they're going to get 100% tax rate.
Ha!
But yeah, our tax rate is set at 5%, so you pay that, plus the NPC tax rate, and if you've got your skills trained up, it comes out to 10% total.
So do you have an eye on the finances for them? Are they working out as you hoped?
Tell you the truth, it's they've actually come in a little lower than we were hoping, but we didn't have very good information to make our estimates on, so apparently we shot rather high.
Yeah, I'd say for the few that we took, I would say about the same. It's a little hard because there was no benchmark with obviously it not being tracked before how much was coming in and out of those things. And even really now, it's sort of a rough estimate because you can't exactly sort by a particular planet to see how much income is coming off it, at least no way that I know of.
When it was working, we had a revenue reporting tool that split all of our POCOs out by planet, but those have been down since Rubicon, so I haven't gotten a good look at it. The best I can do is compare our HiSec and NullSec POCOs to each other as a group.
Yeah, our HiSecs aren't performing as well as we thought. They're still doing okay. Like, people are using them. But I frankly expected a little bit more from HiSec, from everything that I heard about HiSec PI and how active it was.
Yeah, well, we're underwhelmed, but on the other hand, I'm pretty sure that our perimeter POGOs, for example, were reinforced the entire week by that cheeky little Russian group that thought that they owned the place. So that probably didn't help.
They're like fight generators more than like money generators, really, unless you have them at a large scale. But
yeah, although I don't know if you get in a position where you make it clear you're going to defend these, you're not going to lose them, and then people just fuck off, then it's free income basically. They sit there and pour risk into your wallet.
Well, you don't have to fuel it like a tower. For me, that's the biggest appeal.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, very good. Are you seeing the Rubicon warp changes impact your renter income out in 00? Are there any, I guess not, since you said you logged in, you had tons of rental requests. But I thought perhaps it would see a decrease in renter activity or 00 interest in general with it being so easy to kill people now.
Well, I haven't heard any more complaints than usual, which isn't actually ever very many. I get the occasional help being AFK cloaking camped, and I'm like, what do you want me to do about it? When you get down to it, there's nothing I can do to stop that kind of shit, so.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, just stop losing ships in the system and they'll go away.
Stop being dumb, stop ratting in the carrier so the Nyx comes and hot drops you, and be smart about it.
No, if you're listening to this, keep ratting in your carrier, it's okay. Nothing will happen to you. You
right.
Know better. You'll warp off in time, don't worry.
My buddy got popped into malediction the other day because he had everybody's going to go insta-lock now, and yeah.
Yeah, honestly, the most that I've heard coming out of the ratting changes are goons laughing at, interceptors that try to tackle them. Oh yeah, I was in my Isktar and sort of halfway AFK, and my warriors or whatever blapped that interceptor that tried to tackle me, or my wasps or something.
I haven't actually been able to go out there and try it yet, but I'm really looking forward to, now that I'm back from Thanksgiving, taking Friggs out and seeing what I can do. I imagine people will adapt, as EVE players do.
Yeah, I've got a lone Tyrannus down, I don't know, in Detorid or something that I made it to before I logged out, going from mining system to mining system, looking for Hulks to pop.
Any luck so far?
I caught a Coveter.
Not bad.
Yeah, warped in on a bunch of Hulks, but didn't catch them in time because I was trying to play Hearthstone at the same time and sort of distracted myself.
That's what you get for playing a WoW card game.
Yeah. Hey, it's a fun little card game, okay? Right. The other humorous interceptor thing I've actually been hearing is our siege fleets, you know, our bomber fleets. You'd think that interceptors would be like wolves among the pack in those. But apparently what's happening is they're just fitting webs and target painters and are you know, killing small groups of interceptors that come out after them with no losses.
Ha!
You know, it's, you know, an interceptor has like 4,000 EHP, and sure, each torp hits for maybe like 200 damage in a volley, but you got 20, 30, 40 bombers shooting at you.
I can see it.
Yeah.
Those interceptor pilots must be feeling shame, though. And if they're not, they should be.
They should be.
So speaking of Rubicon, Nor had a contract. We got lots and lots and lots of offers for contracts, but we really only took the one. It was for a series of targets in the Forge, which, you know, we all figured would be a pretty hotly contested area, and did not disappoint. Our main opponents were Red vs. Blue, but we also had this Russian alliance that we had to war deck. We took about 50% of the targets successfully, includes a few IBCOs, the Russian ones, I think we got an ARVB one, but I might be wrong on that one. In fact, I think I am wrong on that one. and then RVB had three POCOs that we needed to get rid of, and then there was one POCO that we took, and then they managed to blow it up. So we had it, and then lost it. The RVB POCOs were pretty well defended by Red vs. Blue. Every time we attacked them, with a few exceptions at the end, they would put a fleet out. Eventually, they got sick of us blueballing them inside of a station, and they stopped showing up, at which point we reinforced them. But then, of course, when it would come out, they would show up with a 80-man fleet, then the next day it was a 90-man fleet, then the next time it was a 100-man fleet. Finally, it was like, all right, we get the point. Those aren't going to burn out anytime soon.
Yeah, those Russians, was that Dark Homeworld or another group?
Another group. It was
okay.
Some really weird name. Bright Side of Death.
That's a pretty weird name, all right.
Yeah. It was just one corp of theirs. Then we were war decked them, and we didn't really see too much of them. I think we got maybe 65 million kills off them besides the POCO. Those really were pretty quiet, didn't say much of anything, didn't do much of anything. They didn't show up to defend the POCO we attacked, even though it came out at like the worst possible timer, like 1600 something.
Rather the best possible timer for them, it sounds like.
Yeah, but, you know, forget it for us. Especially 1600 on a weekday. Yeah, I think we took it with like 10 people tops. Tops. And of course, we're all like spamming local, looking for stuff warping in, because we were worried about Red vs. Blue, who were never too far away, because it was all in the one region. So, like, a Red vs. Blue massive fleet was at any one point 5 jumps away from us. We're all just, all right, you got eyes on that station? Yep. Okay, this thing's undocking. All right, is anything else coming? No. No, no, no. Oh, wait, yep, yep. It's just a destroyer. No, right, relax, relax. Pretty much every op.
Yeah, we had those Dark Homeworld guys, Actually, our perimeter POCOs were dropped by a out-of-alliance corp that was immediately war-decked. So we had to bring it into the alliance to transfer them, and then every day at Russian time zone, they'd reinforce them, and every day in they'd come out and we'd repair them, and they seemed to have fucked off.
Did you get any that they took successfully? Probably not.
No, I don't think they took a single one.
You gotta give them something for trying.
Nope, they don't get shit. Ha!
The one bright side of the campaign, besides us achieving at least half of our targets, and the other half being, well, sort of impossible for anyone, was Red vs. Blue decided that they couldn't really handle it with their 100-man fleets, and they brought in some allies, a corp called Failed Diplomacy. And we did get a fight out of Failed Diplomacy, and it was a doozy. As I referred to a little bit earlier in the podcast, it was a fight down in Molden Heath, and it was quite a brawl. All armor ships. It was a hostile fleet of, let's see, I think I had 12 versus our fleet, which had 15. And it was pretty solid. Both sides had 4 guardians, and then they brought in an additional neutral alt, Aneros. It was us in Sacrileges and Zealots versus them in Vindicators and Megathrons. And they had a Loki as well with, like a handful of regular Megathrons mixed in with the Navy Megas and the Vindies. But, like, very clearly going for blaster boats with a little bit of web support, which is pretty nasty against armor hacks, and we almost lost the Proteus. Thankfully, it held on by the skin of its teeth. Flight went on for a long time. Actually, surprisingly long time. I think we were fighting for about 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that small of a fight.
We had an initial skirmish with a Tempest fleet issue. Now, like, we managed to catch it on the warp in, and they warped their fleet off. And then we repaired the Poco for a little bit. And then they reshipped and came in on us, and we had to warp our Pospreys off and get them reshipped back into their combat ships. So I would say maybe not a full 45 minutes, maybe that skirmish, and then a short break, and then like 30 minutes of fighting. But for those small numbers, we were brawling for a long time. Both sides were just... we couldn't really break each other's logistics too well, and so the fight became... how do we break each other's logistic chains? And they were relying on ECM drones and heavy DPS, and we were relying on more of a capacitor warfare strategy with a little bit of ECM drones, but not really. And eventually we just won out. I think the deciding factor was one of their guardians screwed up and got way too close to the Sacrileges, and they managed to pin him down and get him neutered out. And then after they were wailing on the battleships for a while, our FC switched over to that guardian, and he must have... I think at some point his hardeners went off, and because they weren't shooting him, he forgot to turn them back on again, because he went down to 1/4 armor in like a split second, and then they put reps on him, but it was a little too late. They cracked him. And once that one went down, they brought in another Aneros, but it just did not have the rep power that the guardians had, and they were just slowly whittling down their faction ships from that point on. They killed a Sacrilege and a Wolf, we killed the initial Tempest fleet issue, then a Guardian, Mega Navy, Vindicator, 2 Guardians, and a regular Megathron. We almost had their Loki too, but he managed to slip out of point range, because the Vindicator's webbed down his tackler. That Vindy took one for the team. FKM Thrawn. No, excuse me. Eric was the Vindicator pilot. A-I-R-R-I-C. He bravely sacrificed himself so that his Loki friend could get out. Hell of a fight. Best fight I've had in high sec in like 3 years, I would say.
Oh, cool. I'm sorry I missed it. This was my first contract as an actual mercenary, and I came on some ops and I did some things, but most of what ended up working with my schedule was reinforcing stuff and a couple of sort of harassment ops against RVB, so I didn't really end up being involved in any of the fighting, which is a bit of a bummer.
Well, we didn't really have, like, fights except for that one. Everything else was really small ship skirmishes, like frigate and destroyer level, and then the reinforcement ops, which were larger ships. And then when the things came out, unless the Defender didn't show up at all, in the case of the Russians, it was an RVB mega fleet, which we could barely engage. Like, we would come and maybe kill a frigate as they were leaving, but that was about all we could do.
Yeah, clearly you're going about it wrong. You needed to get all your guys into tornadoes and just start sniping them from like 100 and then warp out.
We wanted to do that for the second set of reinforcement ops. In fact, we got the ships to do it, but they had scouted us the whole way back, and as soon as we got within the area, they completely changed their comp from a nearly logisticless pure grind thing to a 15 Dami, 7 Guardian, and like a dozen and a half, maybe even more, tackler frigates. At which point I was like, yeah, our 10 man snipe fleet is not gonna cut it here. Like, we don't even have the ability to trade with the Dominixes, let alone survive the tacklers. So forget it. That was the point at which I mailed the employer, like, so here's the Raynor scans we've been seeing for the past 3 days. Still want us to keep on these? I decided he had enough. So he had hired us for 2 weeks, and we just gave him the second week back, minus the deck cost. And he seemed pretty happy with that, so. He's got some pokers, not all the ones he wanted, but a fair chunk. And we'll see how long you can manage to keep him.
Yeah, it makes me wonder who the employer is, because, I mean, taking them is one thing, but they're not very useful if you lose them immediately.
On the plus side, they're super cheap. Frankly, I expected more of a this is a bit off topic, but I expected more of a price spike of Pokos going into Rubicon, but we didn't really see it.
You know, I actually agree with you there. I mean, some components spiked pretty hard, but the overall spike is a lot smaller than I would have expected for the number of customs offices that would have to be replaced. I did the math on it, and with, you know, the 10,000 plus planets in HiSec, it was nearly a trillion ISK that would have to go into that market to replace everything. And it's ridden it out pretty well, so, I mean, I guess people stockpiled ahead of time or something.
It had to have been. Or maybe there was just an excess of them made over a large period of time, like people anticipating that eventually it would happen in general. So they're... Because even,
yeah,
like, there wasn't that major speculation spike either. It just never really went anywhere.
Yeah, a little unusual. Makes me not regret sticking with my moon goo machinations, though. By the way, if you are, wondering why you're paying more for your R64s or basically anything Tech 2 now, you're welcome.
I don't know whether to praise you or curse you.
Maybe both.
Yep.
Get into Tech 2 construction.
This week in Mercs, I have a really cool story that I saw on Mattani.com just when I got home. Mercs for good! The Marmite Collective... we should mention this for the contract part, but we tried working with Marmite. Not terribly worth it. We tried to get them to work with us on the first set of timers. They didn't show up. Then started flaming us for wondering where they were and that we wouldn't engage RVB 15 to 80 without them there because they were taking so long. They didn't form up. Then it was like, all right, I got like 5 guys. And then they were like, why didn't you engage them yet? I was like, well, because I just told you, then 15 dudes, then you have like none of the ships that we need. And he's like, oh yeah, well, we're not coming at all anymore, so, you know, you're not even having this 25-man fleet that I suddenly multiplied like the loaves and the fishes.
That's
and then we worked with them on, like, the last day. We did get a good fleet. I think it might have been with those Russians you were talking about, actually, to go fight RVB, but the fleets never really engaged each other. RVB came out, sort of went the long way around, took a look at our fleet, went back, we went back, and then rather than engage at their staging system, they docked up next door. And at that point, I was kind of sick, had to go. Still kind of sick. I apologize for my voice. But
yeah, I'm sick
they
too.
Are somewhat redeeming themselves here. Marmite Collective is war-decking people to extort Plex for the Plex for Good for the Philippines, which I think is a fantastic idea. This is the best.
Well, now to be fair here, it's from what I understand, it's their usual thing. You know, they do this already. Pay us, and we'll go away. They're just donating that to Plex for Good now, rather than just keeping it for themselves.
Yeah, but still, first alliance I've ever heard of to do that.
Oh yeah, it's great, and it caused a nice little tears thread on the forum, which was also a bonus.
They gotta be, well, are they actually taking, like, the plexus? Like, or are they just saying, give us proof that you donated a plex and we'll let you out of the war? Because
I think they're taking payment to release them from the war like they normally do, and then are purportedly using that money to buy plex to then donate.
And not purportedly, I think they pretty much have to, because there's a quote from CCP Falcon here saying that if they do use Plex for Good to scam, that they'll have, CCP is going to be on their asses for that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the accounting of it now is going to be an issue because you're taking money, but
yeah, they're going to have to hold to it, and well, have fun with that petition. If they wind up banned for it,
that petition is going to be gnarly when that one comes through the pipe. I can't wait.
Yeah.
Well, it's a really cool idea, and definitely good to see a mercenary unit getting out there and giving people back. Does the CSM have any idea how successful the Plex for Good campaign is so far in general?
Not other than what they've been posting publicly. I mean, they've been doing sort of regular updates on what's going on. Of course, if you're sad about the minutes being delayed, there's going to be a live stream, and CCP Dolan will be shot with a paintball for every $2,000 raised. He volunteered for this.
Sweet.
On a related note, actually, if you want to see more paintballs shot, a somewhat prolific poster from the Market Discussions Forum is matching donations up to 1 trillion ISK. So there's a thread that Kriba posted. Kriba is securing it. He posted a thread about it in general discussion with instructions on how to donate. So if you want to maximize how many paintballs Dolan takes, go ahead and donate through that. It's the only time you'll ever see Kriba offering to double your money.
Oh, well, certainly for two good causes.
And it's and it's the only time your money will actually ever get doubled.
That too, yeah.
No, like
that's
the first
not true.
The first two people in any scam always like are the ones there to build the legitimacy of it, and then everyone after, it's like the sucker. So if you're one of those first two people, you're good.
There's one or two guys. I think just one person. I really wish I could remember the name, but it was a long time ago. In Amar, doing one of those. Oh, I'm leaving the game. Give me your money. I'll give you double. I sent him 0.1 ISK as a joke. And to his credit, he gave me 0.2 ISK.
It wasn't BBLT, was it?
No, it wasn't. This was before BBLT. Boom, boom, long time. Who, for some reason, keeps hanging out in the Cafe Noir chat room.
I don't know, he's pretty cool.
He's pretty cool, but I have no idea why he likes us so much. But he's always in there chatting it up. It's fine with me. He's a pleasant dude. And he doesn't use our channel for scamming, so fine with me.
Give him a shout out.
The only thing that I have against him is he offered to me to pot him for his bounty before the bounty changes went through, and he's got like a 10-bill bounty. And at the last minute, he decided he wanted to keep it. I was heartbroken. Why you do this to me, Boom Boom? Why? Alright, moving on. If your Mark Corp is doing something interesting like Marmite, maybe you have a good Rubicon story to tell us, send it over to Alexei of Card. We'll talk about it on the show. CSM segment. Hello to CSM guys. So those minutes.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
Can we officially call it Minutes Gate?
No, because gate is awful.
Yeah,
I
second that.
We don't need to append gate to more things, and it's
all the
not...
things.
Will I see them wrapped under the tree this year?
Yes, I will print them out, and I'll mail them to your house.
Has there been any movement since our update last episode?
Have you seen any movement?
No, I but mean, I'm not, like, monitoring the glacier as closely. I presume you two are still on top of it.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Dolan, but they're obviously not out.
Yes.
They're not?
Oh. They're not.
Oh.
They actually did come out, and you just missed them.
Oh.
Oh, you'll when they come out, you'll know. The angels will sing. The heavens will part. There'll be light shining on Twitter.
And then yeah, everyone like will just go back to being mad about something else.
Exactly.
Right. I don't even know if we're so much mad as just ironically vindicated.
Yeah, it's a thing. I'm hoping they'll come out, and I would love to have something to talk about here, because it's the dry time for the CSM segment when we are right after an expansion, which means that most of what the CSM has done over the past 2 weeks has been either shut up and let CCP finish up the patch, or post bug reports and just kind of joke around a little bit. We've had some sort of higher level stuff, which always happens right after the expansion, but nothing that makes it onto a podcast.
They've been starting to focus on things for summer, but it's not anything that we can tell you anything about at all.
One thing you might be able to say, are we going to have 8.1 patch for Rubicon between now and summer?
There is always a 0.1 patch. I don't know why you even have to ask. Oftentimes there's a 0.2 and 0.3 too.
And I believe they've promised additional deployable structures for it.
Ah, very cool. So hopefully we'll have some more details about that.
Oh, yeah, actually, another pointer for that. If you have ideas, they have not only promised additional structures, but are actively soliciting people for ideas in the Features and Ideas discussion forum. So head over there and post. You never know, your idea might just become reality. Both the nullified interceptors and the new interdictor bubble gun are the result of CCP taking player ideas and running with them.
Yeah, I guess the only other interesting thing, CCP Rise did an AMA, which was cool. He said some very nice things about us. He said nice things about CSM8, and that warmed my cold, bitter red heart. But the funny thing that happened there was someone asked about pirate ships or whatever, and he sort of offhandedly mentioned that. They were going to be looked at, and one of the things that they were talking about looking into was the Serpentis web bonus, and whether or not it was too strong. And mentioned that there was, some disagreement about this between different devs who do balance work. And I think said that he was thinking that it might be too strong, but he wanted to look at it. This is the kind of thing that devs say to us all the time. It's sort of the dev spitball mode where they're talking about, oh, well, here's what I'm thinking about, here's what I'm working on. I'm kind of thinking this. And on Skype, this tends to provoke discussions about, what are 90% webs used for? Would they be as good as 80% webs? Or, what's the point? On Reddit, what this turned into was, well, what it turned into on the forums was an incredibly mad thread.
Someone actually threatened to kill or implied that it should be killed or something. That post has
carpet
since been deleted.
CCP's headquarters was the...
Carpet
oh,
bomb.
Yeah, that was it. They were exceedingly angry.
And ISD, of course, took their post out back and shot it, but it Yeah, this is why there's an NDA. If people were wondering, it's because of that. This is why we can't have nice things.
No, it serves him right for talking about the Serpentis. No, kidding.
Fozzie came into the thread, and then his response was, "Man, if I knew it would make people angry like this, I'd have done this sooner." But then went on to clarify that, you know, Rise was doing this spitballing thing, and yeah, it may never actually happen, and so on and so forth.
It was.
I couldn't even imagine what they would replace it with. I really like that bonus. I wouldn't kill Fozzie over it.
So you know, I've seen rebounds. Multiple people who are like, Serpentis should be shield-based blaster brawlers because armor-based blaster brawlers are bad. I don't know.
What?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Did you miss the part in this podcast where blaster boats fought like armor hacks, which should be the counter to battleships?
And hey, no, I was not the one saying this. I'm just noting that it's something that I saw pop up like 4 or 5 independent times in that thread.
Dear listener to this podcast, if you think armor blaster boats are terrible, you're very wrong. And if you want me to tell you why, we can do that next show. Actually, you know what? We know what we're gonna talk about armor versus shield on the next podcast, and we'll have that out. Because I know that shield battleships, especially shield blaster ships in general, especially shield battle cruisers. You know, like, there's a big fetish for them, but especially before the railgun changes. But I still love my armor ships, and I'm going to wax poetically about it.
Well, I can't speak too much to the small gang thing, but it's obviously very much the meta and the large block warfare because bombers.
Yes.
You know, you shield tank up and you're automatically saying, yes, I want every bomber everywhere to deal full damage to me.
We saw that with the EMP Brutixes.
Please kill me instantly. I'd thank you ever so much for sending me home quickly.
Yeah, now, I mean, to be fair here, bombers kill armor battleships just fine, too. You just need, like, 3 or 4 more of them. And that's a thing, and yeah, that's a whole topic unto itself.
Believe me, if you want Freeze to talk to you about it, we have a podcast for that too. He was mad. Does not like the daisy cutter bomber tactic at all. Which I don't blame, considering how
I'm not sure anyone but the bomber pilots like the daisy cutter bomber tactic, because it's everywhere on all sides these days, and it's not quite as bad as the old AoE Doomsdays, but it's pretty close.
It's getting to the point where it's so common that it's almost having that effect of forcing a meta shift, which is what you had with the old double-bladed sniper battleships back in the day, where they had to be Titan-proof.
Right. Tank a Doomsday, guys. Shit, now there's 2 Doomsdays. Tank 2 Doomsdays. Shit, now there's 3. Well, we're fucked.
Yeah. Back in the day, it was tank 1 Doomsday was, like, the minimum. And that enforced because the only thing that could do it was battleships back then. So, sniper battleships. That was the meta. There were no armor hack fleets before the Titan changed, because you couldn't have an armor hack fleet on the field because it would die instantly.
Yep.
I don't want to go back to those days. But that said, it's sort of having the reverse meta where battleships are being a bit phased out and smaller armor ships are being phased in, which has slightly less corrosive implications, but... it's a bit off topic for the show. We will talk about it on the next episode, armor versus shield, and we will go into extreme detail. But first, I'd like to close out, but I'd like to talk about EveBet before our closing segment. Eve-bet.com. It's new Eden's premier betting service. Not just Eve stuff, real life stuff. Sports, esports. You name it, you can bet on it. They've also got blackjack, slot machines, and all their odds are industry standard, so, you know, more or less Vegas odds. If you want to go out there and make some ISK on football, make some ISK on League of Legends professional gaming, Dota, if that's your thing, I'm not going to judge. go to eve-bet.com and go sign up for some of their stuff and start throwing some money down and test your luck. Now, finally, so
Vegas odds more Vegas odds rather than like Somer odds. Then,
ooh, I'm not going to touch that one. Somer odds being the Summer Blink always wins.
Somer odds being the very very large house rake. Yes.
So, as we mentioned, Rubicon is not just content, it was also tier harvesting. And while I'm sure, you know, carrier ratters are crying nice and well, some of the best tiers to be had in the entire game, as most of the professional tier collectors know, come from HiSec. It's a pure, distilled tier. You know, it hasn't been through the roughness of 0/0. To even know, you know, it's just it exists in a pure state, the Care Bear, and when it cries, the tears are sweet as honey. And I was thinking of you, dear listeners, when I managed to capture some tears in local, and I've saved the conversation for you, where we're in our, this is patch day, it's myself and a large-ish Noir fleet, 16 to 20. All in bling ships, Vindies, Nightmares, that sort of stuff. We're grinding Pocos. And a enterprising HiSec dweller decides to ask us, in what didn't seem like an aggressive manner for the first line, how many Pocos we were trying to take. Which, of course, why would we tell him that, how many and where we were taking them? So, but we were relatively nice to him. And then he just lost his shit. And myself and my director, Pepizard, decided to treat him in a gentlemanly manner. And hijinks ensued. So let's have Ninja Turtle, why don't you be Spider John? Oh, we're not changing his name, by the way, because unlike most people that we do dramatic readings from, this guy deserves all the hate mail. He's a dunce. A lot of times when we do dramatic readings, it's guys that... you know, maybe we said something weird or ravey, perhaps didn't mean to be kind of crazy sounding. I think this guy probably meant all his rage. So we're going to leave his name in. Why not?
Do you want to do Spider?
I don't think I dare do Spider.
All right, we'll give
him
a shot.
I'll be him if you want.
If you really want to like yell it, you can do it.
Kind of want to yell it.
Okay, well then, yeah, you're up on that one. I'm not, because okay. I can't yell that right now.
All right, so I will play Spider John because Turtle can't. Allie, why don't you play me?
Oh, okay, I figured you could play yourself, and I play Peppy, but I can play you.
No,
just
fine. I'm never allowed to play myself in the dramatic readings. It's bad form. And Mina, why don't you play my gentlemanly director, Pepizar?
Okay.
You guys ready? Nor Mercenary Group, how many systems are you guys looking to replace customs offices in?
All the systems. XD.
We run a lot of incursions.
Seriously, though, mostly in this system or all the Constellation?
Why do you ask?
Because I fucking live here! Why the fuck do you think?
Whoa there, bro. Calm down.
Really? Stop being a dick!
Noir Pocos are publicly accessible.
Like it's some big secret.
You're being quite rude.
No, you were not, by not being friendly.
I said no such unfriendly thing, and there you go, swearing at me in such a manner.
Such vicious rancor.
So being all secretive about this makes you sound important?
Alex, I am quite vexed at this exchange. It is most unpleasant.
It is what it is. Why are you so full of hatred and suspicion for your fellow capsuleer?
Why do you care?
Shall we excuse ourselves to the cigar room and leave this all behind us?
For your abhorrent behavior, the tax rate for your loan shall be double the normal rate until I receive a sincere apology.
Good gracious, man, have you lost all sense of decency?
Oh no! Anything but that, Brer Alexei of Card? That's
I should hope that any
B-R-E-R, by the way, audience.
What's up, Brer?
Fuck if I know.
It's a Brer Rabbit thing. The don't throw me in that briar patch. It's
not Brer. So we call our brers.
Brer.
Brer. What's up, Brer?
Seriously, Brer.
Yeah.
It's a folk story thing. Look it up on Wikipedia. Anyways, I should hope that any mining corps think twice about associating themselves with such base elements such as yourself.
Such language.
Hi, Sec. Welcome to Consequences Online. We've been waiting for you.
And that's it for episode 62, guys. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment, or put in a donation. Check out our store link, welovefine.com/Eve. And you can reach Noir via our public channel, cafenoir.com. Apply to join us or Noir Academy on the forums, www.noirmerch.com. Fly dangerous, people. Good hunting.